This is RSVNB Update, episode 639, recorded Wednesday, September 27th, 2017, preparing the Lost Grove for Solak. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSVNB Update. Dave and I are here this week.
Hello, hello.
Also joining us is Paul, or PFK99s. Welcome back to the podcast.
Howdy, howdy.
Should we tell the story?
You have to.
Yeah, okay. Dave, you ever heard the story about how Paul got an update to begin with?
I don't believe so. Let's hear it.
Alrighty, so Paul, once upon a time, was one of our community members who ran events, and but before that, he took part in our events, and, you know, we used to run these events to get on the podcast, and one of the events we ran was, I believe it was a Valentine's Day picture contest for RSVNB Update. So what Paul did is he sent in his RuneScape Valentine's Day screenshot. But of course, what he did for this is Paul actually got married to someone in-game for RSVNB Update. So ever since then, Paul has been known as the guy who got married to another guy in RuneScape.
Oh, yeah.
So in the trying times, you do what you got to do.
Do what you got to do, you know.
No judgment.
Don't you just love that story?
Worked. And it worked.
I do love that story, and I think I remember that picture contest now that you say that.
Absolutely amazing, you know?
I remember somebody, didn't somebody go to pest control and get, like, everybody with HP capes and, like, a heart fashion or something, or was that
a
different contest?
Yeah, somebody did that as well. That one didn't win. Paul won. I actually remember that now that you mentioned it.
Yeah, that was way back in the day.
That's going to be somewhere around 10 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, pains me to say it, but that sounds
about 10
years
ago. We're just a bunch of old farts here.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of that, someone at RuneFest was wearing a shirt that said buying GF, and his girlfriend was with him in a blue party hat, and it said sold.
Sold, I did see that.
Saw that on Reddit, yeah.
Oh, of course. Yeah, we don't call it Reddit here. We call it something else, but we're not going to be talking about that this week. Maybe next week.
The best place on earth is what you call it, I can imagine.
No. Yes.
On opposite day.
Our favorite endearing term for various communities on that website is the shithole.
Yes, uh-huh. And to put it nicely, the cesspool, but yes.
Yeah, you can't go to Donald Trump's, what do you call it? You can't go there. That's just trash. You can't do that.
That one's fun, though.
Oh, that's a shame to hear.
Entertaining. We'll
there
see.
You go.
Well, what we do for fun on the internet is no one's different opinion. I mean,
some people get married to other guys. I mean, you know, it's whatever you want to do to get on a podcast.
What
we do for fun on the internet is between you and the internet, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, what happens on the internet stays on the internet unless
it's on a podcast and we tell the story.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, I mean, you don't have to get this through the internet unless it comes on, like, a thumb drive through somebody, you know, or something. I don't know.
Some people browse 4chan and whatnot as well, and various other areas on the internet. So, I mean,
if you have to use a Tor browser, then you might want to reevaluate what you're doing.
There you go.
Oh, boy. Okay. So this is a RuneScape podcast,
yes,
right?
It is actually a RuneScape podcast. Thank you for reminding me about that.
Oh, my gosh. Going back to what we do on the internet for fun, you know, some of us play RuneScape.
All right. So this week's update, which you guys are probably all wondering about for the game at hand here, is The Lost Grove. This was teased numerous times throughout the past and whatnot. This is the area where they say Fantastic Beasts, which I think is a reference to that Fantastic Beasts movie. If you guys have seen that out there. I didn't see that. That's like the Harry Potter for grown-ups, right?
Kinda. I mean, the tie to Harry Potter is, obviously it's the same author, and it's, I don't know if it's a prequel or a sequel or kind of a parallel deal, but yeah, I have not seen it, but I hear it's very good.
Earlier in the timeline, but doesn't include the same characters.
Right, of course. So aside from that, the fantastic beasts that reside on the Lost Grove, we've got three new Slayer creatures at level 104, 106, and 108. We also have a new hunter and farming distraction and diversion for weekly consumption, as well as some of the best graphics in RuneScape history is what I have to say about the Lost Grove. That's just a bit of a high-level update of it, but just look at what you see here in the Lost Grove. You go there, and it's this huge forest on this island. They said it's 10 map squares, which makes it larger than Prith. And, you know, it uses volumetric lighting. It uses new particle effects. It uses skybox filters. It uses everything that we have come to expect from the NXT client that makes RuneScape great in 2017. You know, if there was going to be one area that I would go to show off RS, specifically in NXT, it would be this. I took off some screenshots of what was called the water slide in the Grove, because you guys will remember that when the Grove was first being teased before we knew what it was, they posted some work in progress screenshots, and one of them was something that looked like a water slide, and that's what it started being called at on the internet. So I took some screenshots of what the water slide actually turned out to be, and what it actually is a bridge made of logs and whatnot that allow you to access the Grove from the portal and move your way up to the huge island. So that's what the water slide is. And just for perspective here, you can see my character all the way up on this screenshot, and screenshots will be linked at update.rsvmb.com, but you just get a massive idea of how large this area is based on the fact that I pulled my camera back all the way that I could, based on what the free cam option in RS or the Orb of Oculus will let you do. And it makes your character that small. And this doesn't even encompass, you know, one large area of the Grove. This is just a very small pinprick of the area that we have access to with the Grove. So it is utterly astounding, the graphical work that went into this update. So really amazing with this. What did you guys think of this? I mean, this is obviously the next generation of RuneScape graphics. So,
yeah, it looks pretty great.
Yeah. I really like it as well. It easily has to be among my top three in the prettiest areas in the game now, especially just with I just like the atmosphere and the environment. There's not too many places where, the trees sort of extend past your, you know, gameplay camera.
Right.
We're all sort of used to, oh, we got maple trees, and I mean, scaling wise, they're maybe 12 feet tall. You know, it's just sort of, with your character, it's something you can always, like, see over. And, you know, admittedly, when I was, you know, walking around the Grove, the Lost Grove, it was kind of hard to see my character because it was just so much trees. But I think that's good because, you know, it adds a lot of atmosphere, and I really like that sort of, that feel. So yeah, I really like this update.
Yeah, and one other great thing they did with this is there are no major pathing issues. So you can basically click anywhere on the map and your character will go there, regardless of elevation. And, I mean, the only thing to really stop you is the trees. So, you know, normally you go to somewhere like White Wolf Mountain, but you can't get past it because, well, each of those is a specific path and your character is kind of locked to following those. Whereas with these, you can just go anywhere, click on the map, and, you know, aside from the trees, you will be able to access that area of the Grove. You know, if you don't have a modern GPU, you're going to definitely want to turn your view range down a little bit. You know, even myself with something that can normally run RS at 30 FPS, I was feeling a little bit of frame jitter here and there. But, you know, that's the price we pay for a graphically stunning area. So what do you guys think of the Slayer creatures? We got three of them here to kind of fill out the gap of 120 Slayer to begin with. So 104, Vine Crawlers, 106, Bulbous Crawlers, and 108, Moss Golems. And, you know, rather than saying kill X Vine Crawlers or kill X Moss Golems, what Jagex did is they basically just said, go to the Grove and kill Slayer creatures. So you can choose which ones you kill. The Vine Crawlers have the best GP per hour. The Bulbous Crawlers have an equal weight between GP and XP. And the Moss Golems are best for Slayer XP per hour. So that will factor into depending on how you want to kill these. Now, each of these also has a different attack type. The Vine Crawlers use magic. The Bulbous Crawlers use ranged. And the Moss Golems use melee. So you can see kind of the differentiation here. You can either differentiate yourself based on combat or what you're going for in terms of trying to, I guess, maximize your GP or XP or combat type. So I think this is a great level of choice for Slayer. What did you guys elect to kill?
I went for the level 104, the Vine Crawlers, for the GP per hour, mostly because I'm not too concerned with the XP, and I was just curious as to what they dropped, because best GP per hour is kind of a blanket statement, so I was curious as to what makes it,
right,
you know, the best GP per hour. Do they drop something new and special? You know, what's the quantity of what they drop? Is it just sort of increased, like, you know, Ganondermic creatures have been a good moneymaker, and that's because they drop a lot of palm seeds, a lot of magic seeds, and stuff like that. So I was curious with that, but that's the one I chose to kill.
What did you get?
Honestly, it was pretty similar to Ganondermic creatures. It was a lot of Morchella mushrooms, potato cactus. You got the, you know, dragon stones, and of course these are all, you know, noted in, you know, 3 to 5 lots. There was a couple uncommon drops of water tallies, which are, it was like between 20 and 30. So that was about 100K for the uncommon drops. The common drops range anywhere from 5 to 25K. So just to put that into perspective for any of you that are curious what the GP per hour rates are. And then obviously they have the very rare the new gloves that were released, which are going for about 10 mil now. So of course, that is subject to, you know, the recording of this podcast,
right?
But nonetheless,
because I mean, I think the gloves are an interesting feature, but we'll talk about that in just a bit. How about you, Paul? Which ones did you go for?
I went for the moss. No, not moss. Bulbous crawlers.
Okay, so right in the middle.
Yeah, right in the middle. I just hit 110 Slayer-ish, something like that. Yes, several. I don't know. Pretty recently, yesterday. Let's call it that. And so they're okay, I guess. I don't know. They hit kind of hard. You have to run away kind of far. I wouldn't say that they are amazing. I had full decked out tier 90 everything, and I had to actually use food, so that was annoying. And you have to
So they basically weren't Netflix and kill then.
Yeah, I would not.
I've never heard that. I like that expression.
Oh yeah, we've used it quite a bit on the show.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I was trying to watch some show about clones. I can't remember. I'm almost done. Something Black. I always forget the name of it, which is pretty bad. I'm Orphan Black. There you go. And it's very interesting. And I almost died several times, but I did not die.
All right.
I look forward to exploring the area more as I get a task there, though.
Yeah. As you guys know, I am still below level 100 Slayer, so of course I can't kill these. So I'm relying on your guys' opinion for these. so overall, they're not, you know, a lean back kind of creature, but they're not as involved as, say, a Ripper Demon or a Wyvern.
Move a little bit. It's not too bad.
Yeah, that seems like a good mix for post 100 Slayer. But of course, we know at RuneFest they said they wanted to change the way we 100 Slayer worked, or 100 plus Slayer worked, so that it wouldn't just be Slayer of old, and it kind of didn't go very well is the exact words they used. And three Slayer creatures at 104, 106, and 108 gives us a bit of a early, I guess, view of what the rest of the Slayer level table could look like once we inevitably get there. And you know, I think it's going to be a mixed experience. You're going to have these kind of creatures sprinkled in, and you're also going to have new mechanics, which we'll talk a little bit about later in the combat talk when we get to that. So, all right. Anything else on these Slayer creatures, or are they just fairly run-of-the-mill? Drop-wise,
I feel like they're pretty run-of-the-mill, honestly. I mean, okay. I don't want to discount them and say they're nothing special, because I really just I like the update as a whole. But, you know, as for, oh my gosh, these are, you know, awesome, innovative creatures, I wouldn't go that far.
All right, yeah. Fair enough.
They look pretty, which is nice. So
yeah
it's nice, of course.
Scenery and,
the entire area is so pretty. There's also a fairy ring you can activate with 5 Morchella mushrooms on the island has the fairy ring code of BJS. Otherwise, the quickest way of getting there is by way of the Poison Waste Divination Colony. So
everybody likes those BJs.
Excuse me?
What?
Excuse me?
Who said that?
That was Paul.
I don't know.
Anyways, The main drop for these is what they're calling the hybrid Cinderbane gloves. They're a tier 85 hybrid item. They say they also have a strength bonus on par with a tier 70 item. And they do have a passive effect that poisons the creature that you're fighting. And this can stack with the regular poison or the super poison. So what they're saying here is you can effectively create a P++++ weapon, kind of like the old Dragon Dagger P++. Now you get an extra plus in there. And you can use it for whatever you're fighting. So I think they did this because... Have you guys ever used weapon poison since it ceased to be a thing?
This seems terrible now.
Yes, but only because I was basically trying to min-max to get a Telos kill, and it worked, and I haven't used it since. So it's not really something I've ever incorporated into my day-to-day combat endeavors.
Right, and they're so expensive as well.
Right.
And, you know, you normally just apply the poison now. You use it on yourself and you get that effect. You don't need to apply it per weapon like you used to back in the olden days before EOC. And, you know, in some ways, I think that was one of the most underused features of EOC is that you can have poison anywhere. It's just it's annoying to use because they're so expensive. Mm-hmm. But so you can effectively have three poison stacks now with these gloves. And, you know, maybe given the idea that you can, as you said, Dave, min-max it out so that you can effectively have three stacks of it worth, that might cause people to actually have another look at weapon poison. So
right.
It just adds on to your DPS that you're doing at the end of the day. But aside from that, you know, the reason they said they did that in the strength boost is because they're hybrid gloves and no one likes wearing hybrid armor because it puts a defense penalty on you. So yep. I don't know. I'm personally not a fan of hybrid items, hybrid classed items, just because of the negative effects they put on you. But that's just me. So
yeah, I typically, like I said, I don't really go hybrid necessarily in my everyday combat endeavors. But I mean, I do think they have their use cases, Dagonoth Kings. But that's just because if I ever get him as Reaper, it's just nice to throw in some hybrid, just so I have to, you know, switch my weapons, and that's pretty easy. But
right.
I never really go on a Slayer task or sort of just wear hybrid armor, you know, for the sake of wearing it, but it is what it is.
Yeah. All right.
Yep.
So the other thing, of course, that came from this is the Wisps of the Grove weekly distraction and diversion. You basically, with this, need to track down five different Wisps on the Lost Grove. You talk to Teely to begin this, and Teely will activate a series of five different mushrooms that will change color. So you can have up to five that you need to find. When I did mine, I got blue, purple, and yellow. So I only needed to find three because there were some duplicates there, but you can have up to five unique colors that you need to find. So basically what you need to do is you just need to run around all through the Lost Grove, and you get this little contraption piece, and you can trap the wisps in your bucket. And then after you complete it, you bring them back to Teely, and she gives you a special glowing liquid that you take to the central offering area, and you get XP in hunter and farming, which is equivalent of a medium lamp. And this area here in the center kind of looks as though it is where we'll end up seeing Solak when Solak arrives, I think, based on the fact there's this huge open area. So I thought that was kind of interesting to prepare that to be here. Other notes about this here, there's also a small chance that you unlock a follower pet that is styled after the grove. This follower pet is named Vinny. It's not a skill pet or a combat pet, so it's not going to be as rare, but it is a rare drop. It's just a general companion pet that you can have as an override. And there are no skill requirements for this, so presumably if you can get to the Lost Grove, you can begin this right off the bat. So that's going to be a good amount of XP for people who are, you know, just starting off RS and want to train these skills up. You go there every week and you get Hunter and Farming, because I know Farming can seem kind of obtuse for people, and even Hunter to a degree as well. So,
And I think it's kind of a nice little preview of the area. You know, if you can go in there to lower levels, you know, something to sort of aspire to rather than having this... you know, area for high levels, and you don't get to see it until you're that level. So it's kind of just to whet their lower level appetite, which I think is a neat concept.
Yeah. Could you imagine? Sorry, what, Paul?
No, I was going to say everything's done non-aggressive, so you can just wander around as you please.
Yeah. Right. Kind of nice. Could you guys imagine that, you know, maybe we take woodcutting to level 120 and you end up, there's special trees on the grove that you can cut? Because these trees are actually trees in the sense that they're the appropriate scale of what they should be. Your character right. is not half the height of a tree.
Yeah, not so, something you could hurdle if you're an athlete.
There you go.
Right.
So, I mean, lots of potential here for other things that could be expanded into it. But I think one other thing I think that, you know, everyone always has criticized Jagex for is that they would introduce a new area, but it would be completely barren and not have any usefulness to it. Well, here we are, a brand new area coming into game, a very large area, and we got three new Slayer creatures. We got this D&D. We're going to eventually have Solok. So there's three main attractions for reasons why you want to come to the Grove. And I could see all of these maintaining some level of attractiveness. So it's not as though that people are just going to stop coming here, because these Slayer creatures do look pretty interesting from their drop tables and what you can get from them. So overall, very well done, I think. So, anything else on the Lost Grove? I think we covered it pretty much.
Yeah, I think we covered it. I think the best way to sum it up is go there and see it yourself, because it's really hard to describe over a podcast. And
yeah.
It'll be well worth your time to just check it out with your orb of Oculus or free camera or whatever. And it's, I don't know, it's just really sort of showcases the of what RuneScape can look like. So
yeah,
absolutely.
There's also something I found interesting. I don't know what it's related to, but by the fairy ring, there is a wisp that's called Chester. And if you examine it, it just has the examine info. It flickers.
Yes. I actually, I meant to put a note in the show notes so I could bring that up, but that is a little homage to the late, singer of the band Linkin Park, which I think is really cool.
Oh.
Yeah. For those of you that don't know, which I'm sure most of you do, he had committed suicide. I believe it was like a month or so ago. Obviously, his name, Chester Bennington, and It Flickers is a lyrical reference to one of their songs called One More Light. So I think that's really neat that Jagex sort of put that in there. So little tidbit and Easter egg for you if you didn't know it was there.
Yeah,
so.
I didn't know what it was related to, but thank you. Of course you would know that. So. All right. So that's the Lost Grove. Everyone should definitely go there and give it a check. This could definitely be one of the new areas in RS that's showcased. And, you know, you go there. I would just like to remind everyone that you can right-click the world map and choose skyboxes and filters and change your skybox. It looks really good in midday, but it also looks really good in the dawn skybox as well. So very amazing with that filter on. Because, you know, you go there, it might seem kind of dark, but it just takes on a new life of itself when you go to dawn, because you can, the water changes color, everything just shines as though, you know, you just woke up in the middle of the forest after a camping trip. So
you do that by right clicking on the skybox?
You right click on the world map icon.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, look at that.
Yeah, that was a little feature they added a number of months ago.
What?
One of the best hidden accessibility updates for RuneScape in a long time.
Talk about hidden. Yeah, no kidding.
Because, you know, we have Tanis on Informer and updates sometimes. And Tanis...
this is awesome.
Tanis uses visual assistive technologies. And one of the things that Tanis does is he likes the fact he can now invert the colors of RuneScape. So that's an accessibility option. And, you know, it was billed more as a feature for the Machinima and RuneScape Movie Maker kind of people, but it's also very good for people who need accessibility options. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you might not know that if you don't click the world map, but it's there. So
neat.
All right. So moving on from that, this week, patch notes. We have a number of interesting patch notes. Some of them also relating to Invention Batch 2, which they're calling post-launch fixes here. A whole bunch of hot fixes I'm actually going to start with here for Invention. So this goes back to the 18th of September. The Invention Guild instancing system was deactivated and the guild was not appearing properly when instanced. Then we got the stuff on the biting perk, but we already talked about that. Ring of Slaying can be noted again. We talked about most of these that were on the 18th. Moving on to the 19th, an issue with the withdraw products option on the machine was fixed. The Ring of Slaying and the Games Necklace right-click options now all work consistently. On the 19th, an issue where machines were not running correctly was fixed. 21st, several checks for machine charge usage were fixed. And on the 22nd, machine batch assembly now does multiple batches per machine tick. So obviously a problem with the auto disassembler there. But in our main patch notes segment this week, some changes to the Invention Divine-O-Matic vacuum, or the Divine Hoover, as we wanted to call it last week, among other things.
Or the sucker thing.
There you go. There you go. The Divine Sucker. So the Divine-O-Vac... Nice. The Divine-O-Matic vacuum with no charge no longer prevents players from receiving divine memories. All right. That's an interesting thing that could happen. The Divine-O-Matic now absorbs enriched memories produced by enriched springs. That's weird that it wasn't doing that before, but that's good. It is now possible to teleport directly to Zanaris from a portable fairy ring, which is something people wanted, because previously you would just get the ring interface and you wouldn't have the Zanaris option, but hey, you might want a way to get to Zanaris for some reason, right?
Yep.
That, of course, uses a charge. Portable fairy rings now consume a charge when entering an incorrect code that teleports within Zanaris. yeah, that is something that was mixed up. If you didn't enter a correct code, I guess you could just have fun figuring out what the invalid codes were. The promotion information section of Treasure Hunter now displays the cash out value of the whole stack of items instead of each individually.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I mean, you might have some decision if you're going to cash out or not based on it, but if it's only one, you're more likely to just keep, but if you see larger numbers now, you might just decide to cash out. The exiled Kalphite Queen will no longer spawn multiple times inside a boss instance if the final hit is dealt by the dark magic aura. All right. Now, that one's interesting. The fact that you could have multiple Kalphite, or rather exiled Kalphite Queens, if it was killed by an aura. I wonder how that would work. Non-Iron Man accounts can no longer search and use the I am an Iron Man, by the way, or I am a hardcore Iron Man. By the way, quick chat messages.
That seems like a good fix.
Yeah. I mean, because you wouldn't want to be giving the wrong info out and encouraging people to troll you or something with that.
I mean, what, you're going to trade with them and it's going to blow their mind.
Just, yeah.
What? An Iron Man is trading with me?
Or maybe I can go kill this one and he won't respawn if he's hardcore.
There you go.
True.
Abilities and spells now correctly light up when they're available on the ability bar. Carrying cursed energy or memories will now prevent players from teleporting and will now ignore wilderness level restrictions allowing anyone to attack them. So this is, of course, upping the risk on wilderness divination training, both for divination XP and profit. Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe it got a little bit too secure there. In fact, they had to make these changes, so I don't know. We didn't see. I've never actually gone to do divination in the wilderness. Have you guys?
I have a few times. I haven't really been threatened necessarily. There's been a few scares, but nothing too crazy. So it's interesting that they sort of upped the ante, per se.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe it's just trying to get more people to PK or something like that. But I can count on one hand the number of times I've seen someone at the Wilderness Herb Patch, which is just a little bit north of the Divination Colony. So I don't know if it's if it's just me being quick or if no one is frequenting that area around the Wildy Worms and Herb Patch, because that's just right north of the Divination area. But maybe I'm just lucky. A new dropdown has replaced the existing checkbox in the interface options for the Slayer counter. Players can now choose the direction in which the Slayer counter will expand when the skull icon is clicked, and players using legacy interface mode can now turn the interface on and off. Okay. Do you guys use the Slayer counter?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Now, question for you guys. Where do you guys put it on your screen?
I put mine at the top.
Left, kind of
top
right?
Center-ish.
Oh, top center. Okay.
I have mine the bottom right near my inventory and friends list and skills.
Okay. See, I love the fact that people are having the customization options here. But this is not something that the players need to decide about whether it's going to expand out left or right. If it is near, close enough to an interface, just expand it out the opposite way of the interface.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's just somewhere in the open, just expand it out whichever way is going to work best for the Slayer counter. I mean, this doesn't need to be a toggle, and this is ultimately just making the RuneScape interface options and RuneScape options menu more complex for people who are inevitably going to, you know, need to go in there and do something actually useful here. So, I mean, we're going to get to a point where someday that all these interface options need to be tidied up. And, you know, I'm not faulting Jagex for doing this. It just feels like there needs to be a little bit more of an okaying, a process to okay the addition of new interface toggles like this. Because, you know, Togglescape used to be a meme, but now it's real. And I'm sure there's some quote about there about when memes become real. I don't know. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't, but there has to be something out there about that, right?
Oh yeah.
So, just a little bit of a personal complaint there on that. Anyways, continuing on from that, the bank pin interface has been updated to be more in line with the visual style of other interfaces. Who could have guessed? The bank pin interface that we had put in place from 2007, I think, or maybe even 2005 or 6, has been updated finally. You know, granted, we got the update when RS3 came out and the color of the UI changed and whatnot, but it was the old-fashioned buttons and the old-fashioned font. Now, it just looks a lot more modern. It doesn't use the old RuneScape font. It just uses a more general sans serif font. And the buttons aren't nearly as beveled outwards, let's say. So,
geez, that flat design.
Yeah, it certainly is flat. And did you guys know? I mean, you guys probably knew this, but you guys out there listening might not know that you can set up the authenticator app on your phone to work for your bank. So you only need to enter that in once every couple days.
I did not know that.
And neat. Of course, if you log in on a different computer, it will ask you to do that again. So RuneScape Authenticator can work inside the game as well. But I think we'll be talking about that in next week, because I think next week is customer support week. So we'll probably have the usual segment on Authenticator and two-factor authentication and get everyone using it who isn't. So, anyways, next up, the total amount of currency held in the currency pouch, such as rare tokens and whatnot, will now be displayed in the chat box when that currency is added to the pouch. So if you basically add a piece of currency to the pouch, it will now say that you have X amount in your pouch. So I think that's a nice little fix, so you don't see, you know, you just have 87K divine memories or something like that.
That is nice.
Yeah.
At least when I was mining a lot, I would always get, I don't know, whatever the heck you get for shards.
Golem shards or whatever, yeah.
Golem shards, yeah. And then I'd be like, oh, do I have enough to go make something? And I have to, you know, open the interface and figure it out. And if it just tells you, that's pretty nice.
Yeah, I agree. And finally, the Twitch button has been removed from the ribbon.
Yeah, that's been dead content for a bit, I think.
Yeah.
judging by the numerous annoying posts on the subreddit.
Oh, you follow that area, eh?
Follow isn't what I would say, but yeah, I am subscribed.
Okay. Well, we're going to have a chat later about that.
Just sit down with Papa Shane.
Well, no, not necessarily a negative chat. I just need someone
just to share thoughts.
I just need someone who is willing to wade into that a little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
But
an ambassador, if you would like to call it.
I don't post stuff. I mean, I can just look at stuff. I don't know. Reddit's how I get most of my
stuff. That's how you get most of your RuneScape jollies?
Yeah.
Boy, jollies, I guess.
Oh boy, who'd have ever thought RuneScape jollies is coming from the RuneScape subreddit?
Right? They're on a microtransaction binge.
Oh yeah, I imagine they are. I imagine they are.
Get bond. Get bond.
Oh god, it's very yikes.
It's almost neurotic, I'd say.
Yeah, there's only so much that's useful.
Anyway,
I get it, but jeez.
So the Twitch button was removed, of course, because Twitch support was removed from the NXT client. Twitch support existed in the Java client, but I think we all know by this point that the Twitch crowd for RuneScape is on old school. So
yes,
that's fine. Anything else from the patch notes for you guys this week?
Nope.
Okie dokie then. We're going to move off into our continuation of the RuneFest talks. You know, I said we were going to discuss combat and lore on this week's podcast, but the lore talk was just simply too massive. The lore talk on its own was an hour and a half, and the amount of notes that I had on the first 15 minutes of the lore talk were as many as the notes that I had on the RuneScape reveal segment. So suffice to say, we are not discussing RuneScape lore on this week's podcast. We are instead... I know this is this might be a bit of a shock to people, but instead what we're going to do is we're going to do a dedicated podcast to RuneScape lore, and specifically the RuneScape lore that was talked about at RuneFest, which is, I think, a good thing to do at this point because we really haven't talked too much about lore since last year's release of Sliske's Endgame, and there was a lot of revelations about what was currently happening with all the gods and whatnot after Endgame and where things will be going in the future. So we're going to save that all for a RuneScape lore podcast with appropriate people on that show, because there were things in that show that even I didn't understand. And that's saying something coming from RuneScape lore. And nothing against you two, but I don't think you two are RuneScape lore fanatics based compared to how some other people in the RSBNB Update family are.
No, I definitely do not do lore justice, and I fully admit that. So I entrust the lore discussion and dissection to others than myself.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment.
So the RuneScape Combat Showcase talk started off with the Lost Grove, which we just talked about, so we're going to skip over that. They also talked about Solok, and Solok is going to be talked about on the RuneFest Reveals episode, which came out back on Saturday, so update 638. We got full analysis of it there based on that. But a couple of tidbits that weren't mentioned regarding Solok are the fact that this was based on community feedback, and the fact that one of the number one things people said they wanted to do with a new RuneScape boss was the ability to duo it. So that was taken into account when building Solok, as well as the fact that they wanted other mechanics other than just combat. So that is what contributed to the development of Solok. And you'll recall we mentioned that it's going to have different HP bars and different mechanics that need to be taken care of by different people within your group. So that is what they're aiming to accomplish with Solok. This is actually under development right now, and playtests are ready to begin internally. So it's a while from coming out yet, but nonetheless, Jagex is ready to start playtesting it internally. So this isn't right around the corner. It's going to be a little while yet, but within the next 6 months. Also from the combat showcase, stalker creatures that you see in Daemonheim and Dungeoneering, they're going to be added to Zamorak's hideouts with level 71 and 99 Slayer requirements, pardon me. And they're going to drop a tier 80 Hex Hunter bow that will become stronger against magic users. So, I don't know. You guys do divination and see these stalker creatures down there?
Dungeoneering? Yes.
Dungeoneering.
Oh, did I say divination?
You did.
Yep.
Oh, making that
mistake. But yes, it is a boss type. You have the behemoths, you have the stalkers, you have the Calgarian demons, and as everyone probably knows, Calgarians have their own resource dungeon on the Daemonheim Peninsula that you can kill for Slayer tasks as well. So it's interesting to see that they're sort of bringing more of that that content out to the quote-unquote surface world. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, and I mean, they're very popular, And I mean, level 71 and 99 Slayer, so it's not necessarily filling out the tree that you have post 120, but it's kind of a good idea that, you know, Slayer is being worked on and whatnot. Yep. And just a reminder that Zamorak's hideout is the area from Dishonor Among Thieves underneath Daemonheim Floor 61. And that is, of course, where Zamorak is currently residing after Sliske's endgame and the quest last year. So, but what was most interesting about this is that it's going to be a tier 80 bow, and it gets stronger if you use it against its magic weakness. But if who you're fighting is really weak against arrows, it's going to become even stronger. So this is the perfect thing to be using if you're fighting something that is weak against arrows. And it's kind of adding, I think, what everyone has always wanted for EOC, is a little bit more diversity in equipment. Granted, yes, we have other tier 80 equipment out there, but this one is definitely going to be unique. So
very, very situational. And I think that's a good direction for the combat system to go to give it a little bit more depth in general.
So. Oh, yeah, definitely. And I mean, you can look at this all the time and whatnot, but when it comes down to it, that is something that's still lacking with EOC. So things that are weak to arrows currently are including Aberrant Spectres, Abyssals, Aqua Knights, Calphite Critters. Let's see, looking for something else here that might be a little bit... larger Tazar creatures, various Tazar creatures, ancient mages, maybe. So gonna be lots of interesting use cases for this bow. It'd be very interesting to see what
depends
happens
how fast the bonus racks up, I guess. Becomes stronger against magic users if it's like an instant stronger, or if it's a kind of a gradual build. If it's a gradual build, it's only going to be useful against...
against larger ones.
Well, right, something with a crap ton of HP. Just like the new dudes that just came out. What we talked about in the Grove.
Yeah, and you know, I think based on the way it was described, I think it's just going to be a standard weakness to arrows. So it's not going to need to build up over time.
That'd be nice then.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to think of any bosses out there that have that. Ooh. Here's one. Onyx Dragons. There you go. Those are weak to arrows.
There you go.
Neat. So that would be something that you could do. Hydrix Dragons. What are they weak against? Weak to arrows as well. So there you go. There's your use case for that bow.
High-level dragons. You could also use Dragon Bane arrows with that, and you could probably get yourself a... theoretical plus bow. If we're going to go down that road.
Neat.
So yeah, there's like a triple crown there for those dragons, provided that you get assigned them, of course, or if you just, you know, have a whole bearing in your pocket to spend on the gems. I know in the community it's been highly sought after to get gemstone dragons as tasks, and people have literally gone from level 1 to level 120 now without getting them assigned even once. So interesting. Jeez. But it is the best task in the game, XP-wise. It is the quickest task in the game. So, for what it's worth, I still think it's a little too steep. But, anyway.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the only question about this bow is going to be, is it going to be something like the Zarite bow, where it has its own ammunition built in, or are you going to be able to use your own ammo? Because if it has its own ammo built in, then there goes that idea of using your Dragon Bane. So, we'll just have to wait and see on that. Then they talked about the combat system direction and which way combat should go, because, you know, it's been a while since EOC came out. They want to focus on weapon type diversity, specifically bring back the uniqueness of crush, stab, and slash type weapons, because, you know, right now you effectively just choose a weapon based on the speed of it. You know, you choose whether you want something that's fast or you want something that's slow and it's going to hit harder. That's pretty much the only choice that you have. And I think we all know that if you are a sufficient level and you're using tier 90 plus equipment, it doesn't really matter unless you're fighting something like Telos if you match up the crush, stab, or slash weaknesses of that, right? So, for example, if you're fighting demons, you're going to be best off to just use magic against them It doesn't matter if you're using earth magic or fire magic. Just as long as you are using magic, you're going to want to kill that black demon using that. So it doesn't matter. So. Oh, I'm sorry. I got that wrong. Oops. Black demons are weak against bolts.
I was going to say anything. I figured you knew what you're talking about, but hey.
Hey, you guys are supposed to correct me here. That's what you're here for. And that has ultimately led to a system where it's either dual-wield magic, two-handed magic, two-handed melee, dual-wield melee, and so on and so forth. They definitely want to add more choice to it. So, and they asked a couple of what-if questions that they're pondering. So, what if a dagger didn't proc a global cooldown? Or what if javelins were good?
Or yes, what if content was relevant again? That is the age-old question of this game.
And finally, what if there was a talk that came back about what about longswords versus rapiers? So that's the kind of stuff that is being discussed here for combat. And ultimately, they aim to add more depth to weaponry in game. They also want to offer better gameplay for each of the styles. And, you know, all styles feel familiar, and they want each style to feel unique and effectively ramp up in terms of gameplay. So they feel they can make it unique without it being too overpowered, and they can add that to each of the various classes. And an example of this, things being unique, is back in the day, magic would have had the ancient magics, right? But that kind of gave it something that melee didn't have. So that's the kind of uniqueness we're talking about. Add more of those kind of synergies between various combat types. They also want to increase synergy between abilities, and a key example of this is Shattered Worlds, specifically how you can chain those Shattered Worlds abilities and have them do unique things for you. That's something they're going to be looking forward to in the future. Moving forward with this, they want to add both of these through rewards from new content, and the idea behind this is as the game is played, new styles and benefits will be unlocked. What do you guys think about that, given the fact what we saw with Shattered Worlds?
I think it is better to unlock it because, as much as I hate to say it, it gives an incentive to do that content. I think it's better than just saying, you know, just throwing in, you know, say, 8 new abilities because everyone's just kind of overwhelmed. If you sort of stair-step unlock it, you can have some time to sort of get used to it. If that's, you know, your sort of playstyle, if you're min-maxing on a boss or whatever, you can sort of filter through it and, you know, maybe when you're unlocking it, if you unlock it from a quest, maybe you sort of get to use it while you're in a quest to sort of get how it works, and then you sort of unlock it for your character afterwards.
Oh, that'd
and then
be
you
a good idea.
Apply it.
That'd be kind of neat, yeah.
Apply it to your fights and whatnot, so yeah.
And you know, the only reason I asked that is because Shattered Worlds, and when Shattered Worlds came out, it took so long to unlock abilities from Anima and whatnot that that there was a bit of a question about that, if that was going to be the best way of going forward. But that problem has been fixed in-game.
Yeah, I don't think it's really efficient to just put like a level requirement on it because, you know, most people that are going to be concerned with that are obviously pretty much all max combat. So it would just be a sort of drop it in game and here it is. I think, you know, adding some sort of a threshold, no pun intended, to unlock these abilities, I think would be a nice sort of entry point if they want to sort of trickle these, you know, updates and fixes and tweaks in, into game over the next year or so or whenever they plan to do it.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Four-tick auto-attacking, basically the phase of what's happening with your character when you're not doing an ability or you're not in revolution mode. They want to make it interesting and supported in gameplay, and it won't be removed. So this is, of course, what happens when you're not firing off abilities and whatnot. So now, revolution. So they wanted to... They basically had the idea over a lunch hour once, and it became a personal project to change the way that Revolution works. And they are going to be making it so that Revolution will now perform threshold and ultimate abilities. And you're going to be able to change the size of the Revolution area on the action bar. So if you only want Revolution to work for your first five, that'll happen. Or if you want it to work for what it does right now, you can do that as well. So it's going to be 100% user customizable.
That's nice.
About this.
That's really nice.
Yeah. And what they say with this is that full manual is going to get really good. Those were their exact words. And what I take away from that is that by allowing people to, you know, queue up thresholds and ultimates on Revolution, this effectively means that if you know what you're doing with full manual, that's going to be better than Revolution now. Because if you just fire off these ultimates whenever they're ready to go, you're really not using them to the best of their ability. Whereas if you are going manual, you will be able to know exactly what to do and when to do it. So in my view, what they mean by saying full manual is going to get really good is that from the Revolution playstyle, people who are, you know, just having their ultimates and thresholds activated by it are going to, in fact, suffer a penalty in the fact that their combat is not going to be as optimized as someone who's going full manual. So, but I don't know. I think that's good, and that's going to please a lot of people, but it's also going to be, it's also the case of, you know, giving the user enough rope to hang themselves with. Because if you let someone activate all their abilities and whatnot, including thresholds and ultimates on Revolution, they might not be as successful in their combat endeavors. So,
and definitely making more Slayer tasks Netflix and kill for sure.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, that's a term that Sirion coined, I think, a number of years ago. So.
Gotcha.
All right, Revolution Plus Plus and Solok were both TAP projects, so personal passion projects that were worked on the JMod's own free time. Shattered Worlds started off with a half joke and half prototype that was worked on at lunchtime, believe it or not. And, you know, the anima rebalance went out and they are hearing that players still want more from Shattered Worlds. And of course, we've talked about that on the podcast. They say there's not enough variety, more objectives. Maybe you will find a certain thing, certain item that's hidden within the level, or maybe just kill this large semi-boss kind of monster on this level to complete. So they definitely hear that people want more variety in this PvE combat experience. So they're going to be looking at that and progressing with Shattered Worlds as time goes on, which I think is something we said from the very beginning here. So feels good that that is something that Jagex is aware of and the community has brought forward as well. They're also going to be adding more abilities in Shattered Worlds to compare yourself with friends and high scores for measuring progress within Shattered Worlds, which is effectively, I think, what it needs to be. Shattered Worlds, we might have said, needs to be the DPS measure of RuneScape. So if you can clear a certain floor, get to a certain floor by a certain point, that means you're really good. Or if you can do this much DPS on a certain floor, that also means you're really good. So I think that this is perfect for Shattered Worlds and exactly what it needs. And I think it would also encourage more people to go back after they've unlocked the rewards. Because right now you unlock the rewards and that's it. And yeah, there's not much point in that kind of content. So, excellent. Anything else on Shattered Worlds, you guys?
Nope.
All right.
Nice.
Little bit of a talk on raids. Raids 2 is the biggest piece of combat unfinished business, and raids need to receive some important improvements as well. And of these include giving players a reason to do raids more often, maybe a chance for more acto or a new drop table. They also say that the group system is an issue. It's pretty flunky and pretty hard to use, and they're considering potentially moving group queuing for raids to the friends chat system. Ah, the dreaded group system of RuneScape. Have you guys ever used this successfully?
Successfully, no. Have I used it? Yes.
So, I mean, everyone knows the group system is a great idea. In theory, it just doesn't get used all that much. I've actually removed that tab from my chat bar. I don't know about you guys, but
same.
It just has no place for me. They're also wanting to add an insane or gold version of the Daredevil tile for raids and looking at lowering raids limit to have group sizes below 10 to make it more accessible. And finally, add some activities between the boss or jellyfish in between battles because, you know, they say right now it's just tedious and annoying and there's no reason to kill it. Maybe the jellyfish should give a rare drop itself as an option. And the final quote of this was that Raids 2 is not dead. So they want to do something with Raids in the future, but not on the immediate drawing board going forward. So, you know, when Raids came out, I think everyone thought it was going to be like World of Warcraft Raids, but it didn't really turn out that way, did it?
No, not at all.
If anything, you know, going to God Wars is more like World of Warcraft style raids or going somewhere else for boss killing.
Right, because they encourage, you know, doing other things than just the boss, because basically raids right now is just basically just killing two big bosses. I mean, there's really nothing raids about it. Now, if there was more stuff, say if there was maybe two or three sort of jellyfish type deals in between, or if there were more group puzzles in between bosses, then I could justify it as being a quote-unquote, you know, true MMO raid. But right now, it just really doesn't feel like a typical raid. But
yeah. So, all right. And now here's something everyone else was hoping for with Menaphos and 120 Slayer was be your own Slayer Master. So this is something that is being talked about and maybe being worked on inside Jagex, is the idea that Slayer Masters could get together and invite you to become a Slayer Master post-level 99, and this would then encourage NPCs to come to you to get Slayer tasks. They would ask you for tactics and equipment advice, and then based on how well you advise them, you would get some of their XP and loot. So think of this as Meg from PlayerUnknown Ports, except for Slayer.
Yeah, I believe, didn't I go over?
Yeah,
that? Didn't
yeah,
I sort of tease
yeah,
that idea
yeah,
last episode? Or
yeah,
the,
we did.
That's interesting.
That was on, was that on the RuneFest episode or was that on Invention?
Oh, gosh. I think it was the RuneFest episode. I'm not sure. But yeah, I mean, I know it was definitely recent because it was fresh in my mind. So no, yeah. That's interesting that they're pretty much going right along that path.
Yeah, and I mean, that makes the most sense about what to do with it. And it kind of also would be an interesting way of looking at it once mobile comes out, is that you get on your RuneScape mobile device and you see, okay, I'm going to go hand out some Slayer tasks to these NPCs, and you just go in, pop in and do that, and you can get some Slayer XP in the day. So it's adding another way to train Slayer post-level 99, which I think would be really good. So,
pretty cool.
Right on. And then they talked about Mod Pie's favorite boss that he gets to design, because he has never designed a boss, but he did design most of the combat system with EOC. So he says that his new boss, which is called Hostilius, is going to be, quote, the most badass demon boss we have in our lore. So it ingests other demons. Its size could dwarf even a god. It's ruled over the infernal dimension and was overthrown, and Zoros tricked him for all of his armies. And Zamrak has also led rebellions against him. He has since been banished into the Abyss. Of course, referring to the actual Abyss in RuneScape. He would need to be killed from the inside out. You would need to break your way inside of his body and then kill him from within. The idea behind this boss is that it would scale for any number of players in solo or a group. And they're aiming to have three difficulty levels. Casual mode, which would be for questers or kill count for Reaper titles or Master Quest Cave drops. Normal, which is gameplay based, so this would be Queen Black Dragon level difficulty. And hardcore mode, which would be the most difficult NPC on release. And if any J-Mods can kill it in the internal playtest, it will be made even harder, ModPie says. So,
yikes.
Yeah, they're definitely going for it with this one. And, you know, the thing I am most excited about with this, and I know lots of people are going to be, is the casual mode. Because we've talked about this many times before with, you know, Nex Angel of Death being the most recent one, that it doesn't make sense that a quester or someone going for Master Quest Cape should have to go out there, learn combat, and grind out these kills to get a lore requirement. I mean, that just makes no sense whatsoever. So it's nice that they're adding a casual mode for people who just want to kill it for, you know, the kill count or the questing drops. So I think this could be a blueprint for all bosses going forward.
Yes.
Except maybe special ones.
I hope it is for sure. But like that, out of all the combat talk, I think that that one line right there or that one concept really stood out to me. I think that's huge in terms of, like you said, the questing community, the skilling community, the completionist community. I think that's awesome to where, they make it accessible, but people that want to go absolutely hardcore and want that PVM experience can have it. But the people that just need to sort of tick it off the chart and do it once can also do that without, having to basically relearn the game or, buy a crap ton of high level weapons and gear. And I just think that's a really good, even if it's just an entry point, if you do casual, hey, I like this, you can sort of move up to the next one and it might get more people into that. I think it's just a great sort of, like you said, a blueprint. And I hope that they sort of stick to this on future releases for bosses.
So. Yeah, it'll definitely.
Be nice. It'll be like training, except you actually can get some drops.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and one of the things that comes to mind with this is the Giant Mimic. Now, of course, the Giant Mimic is a boss that you need Treasure Hunter requirements to kill, but the Giant Mimic was accessible to anyone to kill. As a result, the Giant Mimic was an interesting thing because it introduced people to the concept of killing a boss. Another one is the Giant Mole, except we all know that the Giant Mole really isn't that mechanically deep. So this could be an interesting way of getting people into bossing and PVM combat, I think. So... definitely on the right track with this and would love to see this be a template for future bosses going forward. Like, could you imagine if this kind of mode existed for next Angel of Death or Araxor?
Oh, that would have been awesome.
So
that would be really great. I could even backport potentially, depending on how well it goes.
Yeah.
Kind of neat.
Yeah, though the thing is, it would basically require re-implementing those things on next, because I think each of these boss creatures is unique in their own right, so they would require different mechanics for different kills, so or different kinds of kills, is what I was meaning to say. So, anyways, that's pretty much all that came from the RuneScape RuneFest combat talk. This didn't really seem to be as out there as the skilling talk or the RuneScape reveals talk, which I think is fine, because as we talked about, combat is in a good place right now and skilling needs to catch up. So it wasn't necessarily as visionary as the skilling talk. I think if you talk about visionariness of the combat showcase, you would effectively look at expanding EOC out to add more diversity for various gameplay styles. But beyond that, there's nothing really that groundbreaking on the way, aside from this boss named Solak. So it should be fine, I think.
Yep.
And, Dave, here's your PVM update of the month.
Exactly. It's about time. Yeah. Gotta keep me sated.
There you go. All right. Well, that's it for the RuneScape section of the news this week. We're going to move on to our listener question. And as I said, we do hope to get a dedicated lore talk happening at some point here once we have a chance to really sort through what we need to focus on in that lore talk, because it is massive based on just what I heard in the first section of it. So, all right. So the question is from Kirby. Hello again. Whenever minigames are brought up, the general consensus is that they're dead and useless. Over the years, the importance of minigames has slowly diminished, despite Jagex's insistence of adding more minigames on occasion. Castle Wars and Pest Control were the best in their prime, but now are rarely ever played. In your opinion, why have players stopped focusing on the fun minigames, and what ways do you think Jagex could liven up the minigames so that people would want to play them more? All the best from Kirby. So... mini games. Why don't we go play mini games? What do you guys think?
I think, and I'm going to tie this back into sort of what was mentioned on the last show with RuneScape reveals and whatnot. I just think that the sense of community has just sort of dwindled, and I think that was a huge part of the mini game scene because. I know way, way back, and I say that, and I really mean probably about 10 years ago when I used to play Stealing Creation, when I was going for, 99 construction and 99 smithing and whatnot, there was a huge sense of community. I mean, there were you know, friends chats for, you know, skilling only, stealing creation and whatnot. I mean, there were forum posts and threads, and I mean, just they basically, it was a clan before, you know, clans were rightly supported in game as their own entity. I think that's a main thing, or, you know, a main roadblock in why minigames really aren't played now. But I think another reason would definitely be that the rewards really aren't scaled up to, you know, current training methods. You know, you don't really, there's really no point to go play Stealing Creation now because, you know, for 10 minutes or 20 minutes of gameplay, you get what, like 15,000 bonus experience. I mean, there's a lot more ways to get a better return than to go and invest in playing minigames. Right. So I think one of the biggest things, other than sort of bringing that sense of group training and that community back to the game, I think sort of overhauling the reward system, other than how they've sort of implemented Thaler, I think just bringing that up. And I think mini games can be sort of thought of as skilling, to where they, as well as skilling, sort of need to be brought up to current training methods and, you know, current, I'm not sure the word I'm looking for, relevance.
There you go.
To you know, the current style and gameplay of, you know, what we're seeing now. So that's,
yeah, I'll definitely agree with that. Personally, the biggest sense I get is that there's no reason to go play a minigame because it's XP waste. And I mean, the mini games that you see being played are Shattered Worlds to unlock the abilities. It feels very rarely today that mini games are actually played for their funness or the community that they provide. So now, yeah, that's a definite truth. Now, how could you get back to it? You basically, what I think you need to do is you need to take the XP rates that you get in Prif. So, you know, those massive XP rates that you get, right?
Yep.
You need to take those XP rates and bring them to the mini games. Now, this wouldn't necessarily be something that you could go play all the time. You would effectively have for, you know, let's just say, I don't know if 2 weeks would be too long, but let's just say 2 weeks, you would effectively have a fishing queue. And this fishing queue is something that you could basically just jump into the holiday event portal to, and you would get taken to it, and you would be able to fish and get a good amount of fishing XP, and you would work together with the community. And effectively, what I'm hoping this will end up being is the fishing prototype that we heard about, the deep sea fishing and whatnot that we heard about on the RuneScape Reveals talk. Or was it the RuneScape Skilling talk? But basically, the deep sea fishing would be one right there. Another one might be some kind of alternate dimension of the Grove, where you have a need to put two teams working together head to head, and one team tries to set the Grove on fire and the other team tries to put it out with their woodcutting skill. So maybe that might be a way of intertwining fire making and woodcutting into one of these kind of mini games. And you have other options out there as well. We have the Great Orb Project, but who plays the Great Orb Project? No one, because its XP is dwarfed by RuneSpan and Demonic Skull RuneCrafting. So all you need to do with things like the Great Orb Project is amp up the XP that they give, so that you say, okay, if we were putting RuneCrafting in Prif, how would we do it? Okay, yep, let's put that into minigame and give it that same XP rate. Let's say we're putting farming in Prif. How would we do that, and how would we give it that XP rate, right? So,
exactly.
And then you just apply a social factor to it as well. And I think that is how you bring minigames in. And rather than doing a Thaler kind of system, that works for the old minigames. So what you would do with these ones is they would be, you know, every 2 weeks or every week or so. And I think that would be a good way of doing it. And, you know, what they could also do is they could also provide a unique reward that if you play it for 7 out of 14 days, you get a unique item for that skill. And this only comes around once every few months, so it's another good reason to play the minigame. And I think that's something we could all jump on, especially if they gave those same kind of Prif XP rates. And like I said, is doesn't need to be in a specific area. You can instance it and have everyone go there and just access it via Portal and Lumbridge, Taverly, Priff, or the Max Guild, you know? So I think that's a good way of doing it. But as for the older ones, as to what you would do with something like Council Wars, it's got to come to scaling up the rewards, I think, unfortunately. Yeah. Though I think if you look at it, I think we all feel that playing Capture the Flag in RuneScape is a bit obtuse at this point. So
yeah, definitely.
That might be a bit of a structural problem there.
I remember when that was quite fun playing.
Oh yeah, Castle definitely.
Now it's I haven't even thought about it in years, let alone tried to even do it. And a lot of that for the older mini games is just getting people to go. There are mini games that you need, you know, multiple people for, and finding someone
definitely
to play with you is going to be a
you need 20 people for Castle Wars for it to be effective. Minimum 10%
minimum. Oh god.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying what you need, but I mean, I assume you can run it with less.
If they could get a world hopping feature built in, so that you could, you know, you can gather people from every world or every, you know, 20 worlds or something.
Yeah, instance Castle Wars.
Right.
But and even then, I don't know if that would work. I mean,
well, even just to get people to play, you can bring the rewards there. But if you can get rewards from, you know, 5-10 different things, and you know, technically this is the fastest way to do it, then someone wants to do that, but that requires a lot of attention, and someone else wants to do the other one that it's a little bit less attention, but it's still community, and you split people, and you know, with a lot of worlds being under 1,000, most worlds being under 1,000 at any given time, it really divides where people are actually playing.
Yeah, maybe that might be a reason to look at reducing the number of game worlds again. And, you know, that was put up to poll. Players wanted it to remain the same.
It's great for a lot of features, but it's definitely not good for mini games, for sure. But for training areas, it's amazing. You don't have to kick people out of places, or, you know, even if someone, stupid people come and kick me out of a Slayer spot, and I just hop to a different world, it takes literally 2 seconds. Like, the person should have done the first place, and I'm back to a fresh world. I don't have to mess with anybody.
Yeah, you can actually access the world selector by right-clicking on the world map.
Really?
Yep.
How do I not know any of this stuff?
Do you use a Mac and you only have one button on your mouse?
No, I'm not. I'm not you, Shane.
I use a real mouse on my Mac.
Where's the other one? I just use it. Hop. I just press escape and hop worlds.
Yeah.
The faster way?
Right click the world map icon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It says, oh, open world select. Gotcha. Yeah, I guess it could save a little bit. I can do it faster with, doesn't matter. All the same. I appreciate the extra information though.
And you know, another problem we have is that Soul Wars and Pest Control, those are two very mechanically different mini games, but they accomplish the same thing at the end of the day. Giving a player combat XP.
Yep.
And that's another issue. You know, it's good to have the diversity in terms of the actual mini game itself, but when they're split up like that, it's kind of hard to, you know, determine which one you're going to go to. So I think there needs to be some serious thought about what the role of these are. Then on the other hand, you have just, you know, mini games that are just for fun, like Trouble Brewing and whatnot. Those could once again amp up the skills and go on rotation, you know, with the other ones that I mentioned, because there's no, like, yes, it's nice to have them in game and you can go play them whenever you want, but it would also be neat to see them revitalized with higher end Priff-esque versions of them with lots of XP coming out of them. So that's what I would do. But anyways, you guys have anything else on that one? I think I kind of monopolized the talking time here.
I think that pretty much covers it.
Yep.
All right. Yep. So if you guys want to send your questions in, email them to questions@rsbnb.com, call or text 571-57BNB, which is 571-572-2632. And we also take open DMs on Twitter @rsbnb. And speaking of that, moving nicely into tech news here, this totally wasn't planned, believe me. Twitter is expanding its character limit to 280. So if you want to tweet @RSBNB, eventually you'll be able to do that with 280 characters. So, Twitter initially started out with 140 because of text messaging. And, you know, the limit of a text is 160. And they wanted to add in enough space for the account name and whatnot. So that took it down to 140. And that's what it's been ever since. So now they're expanding out to 280. And they say that every language except for Japanese, Chinese, and Korean is impacted by the tweet limit. So some statistics from Twitter. Most tweets in English have 34 characters, but in Japanese they have 15 characters. And 9% of all tweets in English hit the 140 character limit, but only 0.4% of all tweets in Japanese hit the 140 character limit. Which makes sense when you think about the various languages, right?
So, yeah. I mean, from my understanding, you know, Japanese, Chinese, Korean, you know, a lot of their characters, you know, signify a whole word or, you know, parts of a word or a syllable rather than having, you know, the ratio to, you know, English letters to quote unquote Japanese, Korean, or Chinese letters is higher than usual. But
yeah. So with going to 280, and they, you know, they say Twitter's about brevity and it's what makes it such a great way to see what's happening. And you know, there's always a chance that you could lose the idea of brevity on Twitter with going to 280. What do you guys think? You guys think this is a good move for Twitter, or is it too little too late?
It's nice that they did it. I often forget that Twitter's a thing until I want to look up a problem and I want to find it worse. It gets posted on a different, on the company's actual like Heartbeat page. So I'll go and I'll look up, you know, problem or whatever company issue. And then you look by most recent and you can actually find it faster than often it gets posted. People complaining is a wonderful thing. But even then that's not 280 necessarily, but you can still be short. You don't need to use the full 280. If you want to have a concise tweet, and you should, if you're on Twitter, it's not a long rambling soapbox necessarily, although it does anyway. It's good.
I don't know. What do you think, Dave? You think it's fine?
I think it's too little too late.
Yeah.
I think it's, the concept is good, but I think, you know, again, there are like 5 years, dare I say 10 years, you know, too late. I think that if it was going to be there, it definitely should have been there sort of off the bat. And I'm kind of puzzled at why it took them this long to realize that said languages are so different in that case. But again, you know, just because increasing it to 280 doesn't really mean that we're just going to see the huge walls of text. And I think there are ways that they can sort of, I don't want to say hide, but, you know, not make a timeline or a feed just these giant paragraphs, you know, just have like an extend option or, you know, whatever. But again, I think it is, you know, too little too late. I support it, but again, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. And I mean, Twitter's at a point too, where it, like from this, I'm getting the sense that, you know, Twitter itself doesn't know what it wants to be. They're increasing the limits so they can see what people will inevitably make of the platform. Like you said, Paul, you know, people who use it for complaining and whatnot. But I honestly would prefer Twitter work on other features. You know, maybe their free speech credibility, maybe let's be a little bit more transparent on what and who we're shadow banning. Let's also maybe not necessarily give us promoted tweets for things that have zero influence. Like the other day, for example, I got a promoted tweet for American Express, and we don't have that credit card in Canada.
Oh, you don't? What kind of world is this?
So, as you can tell, I mean, the Twitter knows that I'm in Canada. It gives me tweets and suggestions and search suggestions for Canada, but its ads are distinctly American. So
yeah, it's a thing, apparently, at americanexpress.com/Canada.
Oh.
I mean, just like the United States, we don't use Amex down here. No one uses Amex.
Yeah, let's be honest.
Okay. Well, maybe that's even less relevant then.
Maybe that's why they moved to Canada. No offense, Shane. Can't get these damn Americans to hop on board. Maybe we can get the Canadians to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like at this point it's just being used to talk to people and get our messaging out on RSBNB. And I mean, aside from that, I don't see much of a use for the platform.
No.
And it would be interesting to see where they could go with this going forward. But I think 280 is too little, too late. So, anyways, that's a story regarding Twitter. That's what they're up to today. Next piece of tech news is that Apple has made the move from Bing to Google for Siri and iOS and Mac Spotlight results. Previously, if you would do a web search through Siri, you would get Bing results. But now they're moved to Google with the newest version of iOS. That's a pretty big move, isn't it?
I would say so, yeah.
And, you know, I always found, I don't know if there's any way to quantify this, but I always found that Google searches were more reliable.
I agree.
For sure.
Compared to Bing. What's interesting, though, is that image results, if you still pull up images with Siri, come from Bing. The article says that this is because Bing has a more solid image results engine, so it makes sense to, I guess, use Bing for images compared to Google. Though I don't know. I think you could probably find the relevant images from both. But and you know, this is really good because half the time, if you put in a really complicated query to Siri, it will pop up something that, you know, says you need to do a web search, and it does it with Bing. And it's just always annoying to get a Bing search page when you don't have a Bing account. Another really good thing with this is that the Google integration specifically in Spotlight on the Mac, like if I search for RuneScape Drygor, Google knows that the first suggested results come from the RuneScape wiki, and that is suggested right off the bat, and then it pops it up right from the page where I want it to be. So Google's a lot smarter with those instant results too, I think. So
they're quite good. It's I don't know, not 100% of the time, but this between the summary or just the summary up top, or a summary of a full article or the summary at the top of the page, I don't necessarily even have to click on any links anymore. That's pretty frequent. It's actually kind of nice.
Ooh, and this is nice. If you search for RuneScape podcast and Siri suggested websites, RSBNB update and the RSBNB update iTunes page are the top results.
Well, there you go. I guess we're doing something right, huh?
There you go, indeed.
Maybe Google's just doing something right. Maybe Google was knows more than we do.
Microsoft also provided comment about this, and they say we value our relationship with Apple and look forward to continuing to partner with them in many ways, including on Bing image search and Siri to provide the best experience possible for our customers. Bing has grown every year since launch, now powering over a third of all PC search volume in the U.S. and continues to grow worldwide.
Also, what happens when you forget that it's turned on Windows 10, I think.
Oh, but, yeah, I guess that would work, eh?
That's the first thing you do is turn that off.
No, I leave it on. I want the full Windows 10 experience.
Ugh.
It's true.
I don't know.
It just feels like something is missing.
I want to search for something on my computer. If I want to search for something online, I'd use a web browser.
If I want to search online and I want to search in general and I'm on my Windows computer, I just use that search bar there. On Windows 10. Yeah. All right. So our next story relates to macOS High Sierra, because that was also released this week. It comes from The Verge, but I want to just highlight once again something we talked about a number of weeks ago, and that's the very poor journalism that happens online. And it's, you know, been happening online and in the real world for quite some time, but it's been creeping into the tech world slowly but surely. And here's a great example of one of these headlines. The headline is, there's one good reason to update to macOS High Sierra. There's only one good reason, is the sense that someone would get from reading this headline. But in reality, it's just a general quality of life update that happens every other year on the Mac platform, kind of like the Windows Creator updates on Windows. So contrary to what this article says, there is actually more than one reason to upgrade. This is tech news because I wanted to showcase, of course, the very poor headlining that The Verge has done here. They've really gone downhill with that in the last year or so, and their coverage in general.
Have you seen the URL that it actually is?
Yeah.
So there's one good reason, yep. But then the URL is macOS High Sierra review,
Autoplay blocking. Yeah. And that's what what the story is actually about, is that Safari and macOS High Sierra does something that no major browser has yet to do. Google's working on it for release in January. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago on the show, but Safari in High Sierra is now going to automatically mute autoplaying videos, which I think is something we can all get behind because it's just so annoying when you pull up a website and you have a video autoplay and you
scrambling between tabs to find out where that voice is coming from.
Exactly. And you guys might note that sometimes when we're on the show here, I will mute all of my tabs just because I don't want one of the tabs to start playing because that'll come into the show. So I am eagerly waiting for this feature to appear in Chrome. But nonetheless, Apple is doing this with Safari, and I think it's a message to users out there that users matter, and users should ultimately have the choice of what's happening in their web browser in terms of media playback, right? Because it's just so annoying. Whether it's an ad or a video, it's not something that you want. So Safari lets you customize this on a global level or a per site basis if you so choose. And you just basically click the address bar and you'll get an option to determine whether or not you want to autoplay media or whatnot. But the default is to stop autoplaying media with sound. So you can drill down further into that. And I am eagerly awaiting for this to arrive in Chrome. And just another note about Safari and High Sierra in general is that they have done some improvements with privacy do not tracking, and they're really drawing the ire of some marketing companies out there because Apple is making it very hard for people who use Safari to be tracked if they don't want to be tracked. So I think if you're a Mac user and you don't have any affinity towards Chrome or Firefox, you might want to just stick with Safari when you open up High Sierra. But it would be nice to see this come to Chrome as well. That level of ability to be rest assured that you're not being tracked and not need to rely on third-party plugins for that, because I think everyone uses those by this point, right?
Yep.
Like Ghostry and whatnot.
Interested to see how it actually plays out, because this is not the end-all, be-it-all way to stop that, but...
What do you think is the best way of stopping that?
You'd have to anonymize data somehow. I don't really know what you can do. If you have enough data points about somebody, you can
uniquely identify them.
So you have to limit that significantly.
The thing is, people give this up all freely. You use Facebook, giving that up. You use Google, you're giving that up, right? So
yep, for sure,
it's a matter of trust.
Well, this blocks third party sites unless you actually visited them. So as an example, the Facebook like button that will show up on the majority of pages, including this Verge one right here, same with the tweet thing, that's on the page, that's still going to be able to track you between sites.
Right.
At least Facebook and Twitter would, but they would have to then contract with some other advertiser to do that. But it's unlikely that you would, as an example, go to doubleclick.com, which would be Google. So they either have to start hosting ads from google.com or something else to potentially track you better. Although they have already said that they are able to track you, or that they're able to better identify you as a human based on your behavior already. I don't know how exactly that's all done, but
probably mouse movement and interaction with the page.
It could be. And if that's unique enough too, that's another data point that somebody can use.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what the website was. Basically, there's some website you can go to. You can
Firefox.
It generates a digital fingerprint for your web browser, and it shows you how unique your fingerprint is compared to others.
Panopticlick.eff.org.
Ah, there you go. Thank you. Yeah.
Oh yeah, there.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about the EFF in general. But this is an interesting little service that they have. So if you test yourself, it'll provide you basically the fingerprint for your web browser out there. and whether or not you're unique or whatnot. That's definitely something that can be very eye-opening, because you can look at various aspects like battery usage, because there's a battery API, for example, or force
crap that's built in a JavaScript.
Yeah.
It really doesn't need to be.
So is your browser blocking ads? No. Is your browser blocking invisible trackers? No. Does your browser unblock third parties that promise to honor do not track? No. Does your browser protect you from fingerprinting? No. Your browser has a unique fingerprint. So here's the fingerprint of this browser. And I guess when you combine all this up together, you could really see what's going on here. And I appear to be unique of the 674,000 who've been tested so far.
My does your browser protect from fingerprinting still is trying to load, so I suspect that I'm blocking that somehow. There's also an amiunique.org that I was able to do, and it says we now have over 400,000 fingerprints, and after doing my thing, almost, you can almost certainly be tracked. So, yay!
Yeah, and that's even when you're trying, right?
Yeah.
To not be tracked.
Well, I mean, you know, roughly.
But yeah, so that's definitely something that Apple's working towards, but there's a lot of work to be done on that one. But just interesting that we can see what The Verge is talking about and what's actually going on there. So.
They didn't mention the new file system or anything, because, you know.
Yeah, who cares about a file system, right?
Yeah.
But the file system has actually been held back for anyone who has their system an SSD. So
many Macs aren't even going to get the Apple file system on day one.
Yeah.
Oh, only SSDs.
Yeah, only SSDs. So
I'll have to test this out later.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to move on to some other things right now. So our skill of the month update for September is the summoning skill of the month. We're in the same position we were last week after Double XP weekend. Parnassius is in first place with 45.8 million, Jamandi 52 with 18.6, and Flash with 12.5 million summoning experience.
Wow.
And the skill of the month for October that you can sign up for right now is Attack. I don't know if combat is something that we all find very interesting, but there you go. The skill of the month for October is Attack. We're going to talk about some achievements right now. We certainly do not have as many left as we did last week. We only got a small handful this week. So I'll get us going. And on September 25th, we had Daydreamer with 99 agility, PTV Solly with 99 defense on the 25th as well. Moving on to the 24th, we had Kotahi Atwa with 99 farming, and Tora Te Hippie with 99 farming as well on the 24th.
So we also had Ross Airy with 99 range on the 23rd, PTV Sully with 99 Herblore on the 23rd, Quest Caping with 99 construction on the 23rd, and as well as Cat Mac with 99 woodcutting on the 23rd.
We've got nice. I Herblore with 120 Dungeoneering on September 23rd, Chato 3000 with 99 Fletching on the 22nd, Diapolo 10 with 99 invention on the 22nd as well. Azio something, 120 Dungeoneering on September 21st, and Rotatoes, 99 farming on September 20th.
Good job, everyone. That was nice and manageable compared to last week's achievements.
I didn't have to catch my breath after I read my segment.
Alrighty, so if you guys want to write for Informer, we're looking for a few RuneScape writers. Email an application to shane@rsbnb.com and include a 500 to 1,000 word article on something RuneScape related, your favorite game update, for example, your favorite feature about RuneScape, or just something about RuneScape in general from a philosophical perspective, I guess you could do as well. Basically anything RuneScape related. You will write once a month for Informer. Articles are due whenever you want to set your deadline. We're very flexible with that. And we're also very flexible with topics as well, if you want to write about something that might be a little bit off the wall. So lots of opportunity for Informer. Just send those applications in to shane@rsbnb.com. All right. So are you ready for the pick of the week, you guys?
I'm ready as I'll ever be.
You guys know what the pick of the week is?
No.
Star Trek.
There you go. Pick of the week is Star Trek Discovery, which premiered this past Sunday. Yes. I feel really sorry for you guys in the U.S. because it's on CBS All Access, which is an obscure streaming service that I don't think anyone in the U.S. has. Here in Canada,
Netflix or something too. I don't know.
Here in Canada, it's on the Space Channel, but in the rest of the world, it is just on Netflix. So, a very easy way to get it if you're anywhere but Canada or the U.S. But Star Trek Discovery, first two episodes aired this past Sunday, and I was pleased. I was impressed, considering it's been 12 years since the last episode of Star Trek aired on TV when Enterprise ended in May 2005. It was nice to see that same general sentiment and back towards weekly Star Trek on TV. I think it felt like Star Trek, Paul, you watched it. It was good.
It was okay. It seems it's very
it's going to be very serialized.
Yeah, I'm still kind of waiting for it to slow down. It's very, very quick right now, which isn't necessarily bad, but it's not like Star Trek of yore. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
And the graphics are just really over the top, and I'm sure that's because Star Trek's back, so they have to do that. But if it's like a movie every week, then I don't know. It's different.
Yeah. And you know, we haven't even seen the main character ship, of course, yet in this one. So that'll probably be this week, if I had to imagine. This week's episode kind of felt like a prologue, but we won't go through the exact story of what happened. But if you do have access to CBS All Access in the US, I would definitely recommend that you give it a watch. But if you're in the rest of the world and you have Netflix, that's going to be the easiest way to get access to it. I also felt as though it was it felt like Star Trek is what I wanted to say about that. And that's what everyone was hoping for after seeing the last three movies, because that can be argued about whether or not those felt like Star Trek when they first came out, right? So I think it was done well. But that's the pick of the week, Star Trek Discovery on CBS All Access in the US and Netflix everywhere else. Or if you're in Canada and you're lucky, you get it on the Space Channel. So, Star Trek Discovery. All right. So what have we been up to? Let's start with you, Paul. What have you been up to on RS?
Slayer and Attack are my two primary goals things. So we've been doing those. And trying to get dailies in while I can. Outside of RuneScape, I've been working. I've got my first interview with an actual person tomorrow, so that'll be neat. I'm interviewing a dude. It's going to be great.
Just try not to marry him to get on a radio show.
I don't think it'll be a problem. I'm supposed to interview a guy now three times. Last Tuesday, then Friday, and then Tuesday again. He flaked out on Tuesday.
Oh my gosh.
How terrible is that?
So are you going for
everything prepped?
Are you going for 120 Slayer and 120 Attack? Or?
Yes.
All right. So
is almost there, but Slayer is going to take.
Right.
I'm going to be dead before then, I think.
Yeah, I'm guessing Menaphos is what brought you back for that then, right?
Nope. I had just wanted the cape a long time ago, and I just now that they're adding stuff past 99, it kind of makes even more sense.
All right, fair enough. How about you, Dave? What have you been up to since the last time we've been chatting here?
Oh, just ticking away at Trim Completionist. Right now, I've just been doing some divination to finish up my memory strand. I don't want to call it a quest line, but my prestiges, I guess you could call it, finishing up that for Memorial at Guthix. You know, still camping Calgarian Demons for my titles. And as most of you know, I finished my Shattered Heart, so I'm moving on to my Golden Rocks to do that. So that's kind of what's on the radar for my near-term goals. So just chipping away at those.
All right.
Nice.
As for me on RS, I have started off invention training. I've been bouncing back and forth between the Ark and, dare I say it, the waterfall fishing. I honestly don't like waterfall fishing.
Yeah.
So I've just been doing arc fishing a little bit, and I think I did one rod at the waterfalls, but I'm going to see if I can move into range training for that to just try and add some diversity to it.
You trying to get to 120 or 99?
I think it's like level 96 or something right now. We'll see how far we go after that.
It goes pretty quick at the waterfall.
Yeah, I know. I know. I just have moral objections to using that as a training method.
You'll get done fishing. You'll just be good.
Oh, I'm already done fishing. I got 99 by doing the arc. It just happened.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I thought you said you were 96.
No. I'm going for 96 invention.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yes, neat. Doing the fishvention thing. So,
gotcha.
But also looking forward to those augmentable offhand skilling tools that are coming out that were announced in the RS reveal segment. Those look really neat. So, but anyways, I believe we're good for this episode of Update. Anyone got anything else?
I think we covered it.
Okie dokie then. Well, with that being said, we'll see you next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. If you want more in the middle of the week, you can find us in-game at our friends chat, Bits Bytes. And if you want to find us on the Twitter machine, that'll soon be tweeting up to 280 characters. We're at RSBNB, so follow us there for all the RSBNB Update goodness you've come to expect. So see you next week, everyone.
Every week.
See ya.